You know, some, you, when you get my age, you know, look back and realize that it wasn't the skills that you had that got you to where you want to go. It were the deficiencies that you had that kept you from where you could go further. You know what I mean? We're judged more by what we don't possess than what we do possess.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Conversations podcast. Today, I have the honor to learn from Walter Holmes. Walter is the founder of The Village, which is a collaborative student/community development initiative to address the whole person needs of local students. Walter has served in the U.S. Air Force, developed a stock market game that is still used today by many educators, and has been leading the charge for educational reform for many decades. He wants to use different metrics that encourage student growth rather than student results. This conversation that I had with Walter was fascinating, to say the least. It was also eye-opening. He shared many things that he thinks and problems that the education system has and how we can better serve students. I don't want to spoil any of the rest of the show, but without further ado, let's welcome Walter Holmes to the show. I even read up on you, and you have quite a remarkable career. You've done Air Force, you've done finance, Wall Street, all that fun stuff. And then you've also done now what you're doing currently, the education and trying to bring about change there. And I find that pretty cool. How do you even, like, those three subjects just seem to not correlate at all, like, at first glance. How did you get started there?
Well, it's an interesting kind of events. In the late 1980s, it kind of shows on my age, I had a business that I lost that I shouldn't have lost. You know, I mean, I made mistakes, and I guess I needed some sort of recovery, something to do. So I wind up, I had an interest in economics and finance. So I wind up doing this research paper about economics education and how to learn about stock market investing. And it's one of those skills where you learn by doing. You know, it's repetitive. There are things that click when you hear things and understand how stocks are going to react to certain news, that kind of thing. And it reminded me of a model that I had in college where someone, one of my professors, had the entire class divide up a period of time, and everyone had like 2 weeks. Oh, wow. And everyone studied what happened in those 2 weeks. And I kind of did that in developing the Wall Street Whiz. I don't know if you got a chance to play the game.
I did not. I wanted to, but
it's off the chart. You're going to love it. It's off the chart. So once I did that, suddenly I'm immersed in education. You know, I worked with school districts, the Philadelphia School District for one. I was working with sponsors to get it into schools to be paid for. And I began to understand the challenges that school was having, you know, and how I don't think it was actually serving our youth the way it should be served. They should be served. So I kind of got into that. And then on the flip side, I was in the military primarily as a reservist. So I had a life outside where I owned the Fifth House company, the company of Fifth House. But what we were doing in the military was quality management and human resource development. Human resource development was basically the affirmative action things that were done in the late 1990s. And today might be called DEI. Mm-hmm. But it didn't seem like they were serving a large portion of the students well, because a lot of it's tied to economic indicators that are uneven across the board. So getting into what I was doing in the military, which had to do with structure and assessment, I began to apply that in education. And when I did, I found out that education and the movement of students through education can be evaluated in three different ways: a standard, a value, or a rate. And a standard, as you know, is standardized testing. Mm-hmm. Rate of development is a growth model. So I was promoting a growth model, student assessment, where rather than looking at students growing to a point where they're tested to see if they attained what was supposed to be attained by that time frame. Growth model looks at every student individually and then projects where they should be at a certain amount of time, and then is able to do the analysis of what it will take to get that student there. So as an analysis model, it was much better and more individualized for the student. It wasn't until 2005 that Dr. Margaret Spelling, the Secretary of Education for George H.W. Bush, mm-hmm. George W. Bush, I'm sorry.
I think it, yeah.
Approved the growth model, but no school district or education system has ever adopted one. So I was kind of surprised, but that's what I've been doing, and that's what we're creating now in community-based education, because we have a model to evaluate kids through, and we can actually now make a link to education, public education, in ways that weren't done before, such as cognitive development, whole person student development, those kind of things, which I think are more important than the academic attainment that they get in testing. Did I answer your question?
No, that's great. I think all those things that you did kind of led you to this point right now, which I think is what you're doing is cool stuff. And this is a question I had while you were kind of sharing that. And that's, how did you kind of come about and find that there was a problem to begin with? Like, obviously, right, we kind of sense, I mean, most people, when you ask them, hey, what's the biggest problem? People say education, right? How did you kind of pinpoint maybe the problem to begin with?
Well, I don't think it's a mystery. I mean, if you read A Nation at Risk, which is written in 1982 by officials with the Ronald Reagan administration, they paint a very gloomy picture of our education system. And all the warnings that they gave, all the ways that things could go bad, it seems like that was a script that was written for us that we followed to the T, where our kids across the world are being judged very poorly against other nations. We created a lot of bad habits, such as I remember reading in the early 2000s that although our kids were doing poorly in standardized testing across the world in industrialized nations, we were requiring our students to learn 400 to 700% more content, which means that the value of what we were teaching them wasn't there. We were just giving them this additional burden. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of areas that we could begin to look at for how we could readdress education, which is in my book, actually, called Lead from the Middle, Lead from Behind, which chronicles my time in the Air Force and how it matches to education and what I'm doing now.
That's cool. So here's a question I just kind of have. I love the approach of a growth model. I think that, I mean, aren't we, isn't that why we're here, right? We're trying to grow, become better than we were yesterday. And my thought is, because you said standard is one of them, one of the things I just kind of want to put out there is, isn't standards the easiest metric to kind of quantify and say, like, okay, like, this person knows this, here's like kind of the standard.
You know, okay, first of all, let's look at the structure of education. The grade system, which was introduced in the mid-1800s.
Just a long time ago.
Was basically established so that there could be some sort of judgment as a child being 10 years old should know this amount of information by then. But as you begin to go through modern age to today, that's no longer a floor. It now becomes a ceiling where you're going through grades progressively along with your peers. You're being taught what's appropriate for that particular grade, where you may have excelled in something that others in your class haven't. You're held back because you have to go through the system that way. So I think it's as a growth model, we can create models where after every class, a student could go to the next course or next class that would be the next step in their own development, where in a high school of 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, I could see a class filled up with 9th through 12th graders who are at the same level at something at that particular time. There should not be a race or a competition among students, which is what standardized testing is. The competition that everyone has is with themselves. You know, are you a better person than you were yesterday? Where do you want to be 5 years from now? And can you get there? Are you on track? Is the way education should be designed. Not a, hey, I'm going to do all this and teach you all this. And then at this date, you're going to demonstrate that you understood everything I taught you. A problem with education also in that model of standards in the demonstration of the skills or things that you're taught is that a lot of times the skill sets you need to demonstrate your proficiency in something are different than the skill sets that you were actually taught. A lot of them are cognitive skills, like presentation skills, you know, areas that aren't graded and can have a direct impact on how someone perceives your understanding of something that they taught you. So there's a lot of gaps in there that need to be addressed in the standardized testing model. Plus, it just could happen to be a bad day that you had when that test came. You
know? Exactly.
So that one day they want to judge you. No. Also, just one other thing. I was able to teach at some point in public school. The model is I introduce new material Monday. I give a quiz on Wednesday. I give a test on Friday. Student gets 80 out of 100 questions or 8 out of 10 questions right to get an 80. That tells me nothing about what the student has learned. And also during a school year period in that model, there may be about 25, 30, 35 outcome indicators that I'm going to average out to determine what the student should get as a final grade. In a growth model, the assessments are totally different, where we can create as many as 20 to 30 metric outcome indicators for each activity. So rather than having 30 or 40 at the end of a school year, we may have 4,000 metric indicators so that teachers can look at evaluations on a board and say, that's Mary, that's Johnny, that's Phil, because it's measuring the child, not the grade of academic achievement, you know? So
I follow that. I think that's a great idea, by the way. When I was reading the information you sent me, the thing I thought was cool is, I mean, you gave like an example. It's like, all right, what's collaboration? Like how well did they work, like their teamwork, presentation skills, all these skills essentially that are quite frankly useful in the workplace, proficient or like, are they doing? And you can kind of look at that and say, okay, that person is doing that. And it's more, you're more rating skills. Am I kind of understanding that correctly? Like you're rating skills rather than just, hey, do you know some information?
You know, when you get my age, you're going to look back and realize that it wasn't the skills that you had that got you to where you want to go. It were the deficiencies that you had that kept you from where you could go further. You know what I mean? We're judged more by what we don't possess than what we do possess. And I find that if we're able to create an understanding of who we are and have the ability to demonstrate that through whatever model we're being asked to demonstrate that in, we call upon the cognitive skills much more often than the reasoning skills, the presentation skills, the fact of being comfortable with yourself when you're presenting to people. Those are the things that will get you going further. Howard Gardner talked about nine skills sets of individuals, which has to do with the character development, with certain types of cognitive abilities that can be utilized to take you to XYZ, wherever you want to go in your life. They have to have a value in our system, you know, where we value someone's ability to speak in certain avenues, such as in religion, being a minister, or in social media, or in acting. Those are the skill sets to take. EQ skills, empathy, self-awareness, self-determination, self-regulation. We also added reasoning skills, inductive and deductive reasoning. I think that those skills will take you a lot further than a lot of the academic skills that students are required to know. So it just seems like from my experiences, those are the things that make people successful, less knowing content and facts.
I agree. And not to mention those quote unquote, I don't want to say like facts build upon each other and evolve over time. So like the stuff that maybe you're learning today, right? 20 years down the road when kids are in school learning the stuff, it may be different, right? And right, the content changes, and maybe we got to train or like teach how to like essentially adapt when things change.
You know, like it's funny because as I deal with people my age who want to interface with students, there's a lot of, you know, stories about how they were able to achieve something. And I always have to laugh because we have no idea what the children are going to go through 10, 20 years from now. They have challenges that we could not imagine as I was growing up. AI, you know, there are all sorts of health issues that are going to come to light real soon when they're even discovering plastic in our arteries. You know what I mean? So things are going to happen that they need to prepare for more than we were when I was growing up. I was born in the 50s. So, you know, that was a really good turning point where we were ascending into a more of an inclusive society. We're going the opposite direction now. Opportunities were growing when I was coming up. Opportunities are diminishing now. So their world has to be focused around something that's totally different than my world was. And that is, they have to work in teams. They have to be able to work together and magnify what they have as people, as communities, because they're going to be invisible by themselves. And that's how it works. So that's part of the community-based education system we're talking about, how we develop a strategy in turning into communities so that someone can walk down the street and see something that needs to be changed and say, I have the methodology to get that done because I'm now working with this group of people to do it. That's where we need to be at. That's what I'm working on now. And what we're putting together has grown pretty interesting. We have something now called Community Public Square, which is going into libraries and churches and community centers where people can come together. And it starts with a strategic plan about where the community needs to be, like a problem or issues that need to be addressed. And then they do a strategic plan. They figure out all the ramifications and all the factors that are involved in it. And then through our web-based system, we're now able to engage hundreds of people in the community, all taking a piece of this strategy to solve these problems. And providing that type of structure, I think, brings it down to a grassroots level where people now can begin to take ownership of their communities, their lives, rather than having someone waiting for someone to come down and do it for them, which is often the case.
That's true. it is, right? And so I'm curious, could you just like provide maybe an example like of someone in your like kind of your online group, how they like identified a problem and then went about solving it and like kind of the approach they did and how they engaged more and more?
Wow, that's funny because I was putting one together for Sussex County in Delaware. Is a group of people there. They had issues like food security, gun violence. I'm just gonna use those two. So for the gun violence, it led up to the creation of a community policing plan. And a community policing plan, I think, is essential for every community because there are policies and there are relationships that need to be established. Otherwise, you just have people with guns walking through your community. And it has to be a total community for you to address these social issues that go along with it, not just the violence and the parts that you see coming out as the violent parts of the community itself. So I think it's real important that as a community, I links or becomes collaborative in addressing this. They have to understand what is the problems of the community, what are the social issues of the community, what's the economic issues of the community. As I taught, I found a lot of kids needed behavioral health problems or issues. And how do you identify them and how do you remediate them? the systems that we have to do that don't work. So there are a lot of factors that contribute to the gun violence that a community policing plan will address. And as I wrote it out, and now it's online, I think it's probably about 30 to 40 different individual projects. They all just come together like a puzzle. And suddenly when you have those things remediated and executed, you now have a community policing plan in place. That's how it kind of works.
That's cool. So it's like multiple people coming together on like almost an online public square.
Exactly. Well, you know, the problem was I would work in communities, and there's an issue. So the community will meet someplace, a church hall or something like that. You got 100 people in the place. Everybody's worked up to a fever pitch. Ideas are flying all over the place. And then it ends. Everybody walks out and goes home. So it's energy. You just wasted energy. You wasted a whole lot of energy. What we do is come in and do the same, that same strategic planning process. We facilitate it. Once it's executed as a plan in terms of strategic plan of the meeting, in about a week, everyone that was at the meeting who wanted to be a participant has left their name and phone number and email address. And then from that, and areas that they want to basically participate in the community with. And then about a week later, they're all given emails that show where they can log into the system. And then it gives them a guideline on how they can then execute the project they're now leading or a part of. So everyone suddenly, from that 100 people in that hall from the strategic plan initially, every one of them is now engaged. And that's how you get people to begin to be part of something greater than themselves, where they see the efforts that they're doing numerically materialize as a result of their effort. It's just something that will motivate people. And I found that that's probably the biggest motivator for how you can get a community to become more collaborative.
It's true. I mean, that idea itself, it's that people just want to see essentially their efforts kind of realized almost like to completion.
Well, let me throw this out real quick then. And this for you just so you can understand it a little bit better going forward. There's a concept called systemics. It's a whole science. It has to do with how organizations and people work collaboratively. And when you talk about professional development and lifelong learning, you have to include the concept of systemics as a way to understand how people work together in holistic environments. So if you get a chance, just kind of read the topic and you'll kind of understand where this is kind of going. I think it's a good counter for AI as well. So
I'm curious though, what is kind of, just putting out there, you don't have to answer, but what is your view like kind of on AI and why it could either not work for us or could it actually help?
AI is, it has an ability to eliminate a lot of jobs and positions. I mean, it's basically human, superhuman skills in certain areas that are now filled by humans. You know, you can have one AI versus 100 people in a room and get the same results, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
except there is a component of the 100 people in a room managed well that AI can never meet. And there's a certain level of creativity. There's a certain immediacy of the moment that I don't think AI can compete with people. We just need to begin to accentuate the value of people themselves, you know, where it's kind of hard to explain this part. Everything is new. You know, everything is like shiny and brand new. So it becomes the new thing. But sometimes it's better to actually create something, better something that already exists, a wine or different foods or artwork or furniture, mm-hmm. functional things, where those type of investment in human capital yields aesthetic results, I think, that are more important sometimes than the new thing, like the new social media platform or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. I guess it's, and we have to get back to that part of it as well, you know?
There are some things that are meant to last, right, and should last. And there are some things that, yeah, sure, like we want to innovate, we want to progress.
Right, but exactly. Yeah, I think we're losing that. We really are.
We're kind of like getting on the path of just always the new thing. I think social media probably hasn't helped that, because, I mean, I grew up with that. And, man, I'll tell you, like, just the constant, like, okay, something has to be new, right? But, I mean, actually doing this podcast, you kind of realize, like, no, there's some old things, like, that are really cool, and you just need to keep those. And there's a reason why they're there to begin with. And, yeah, build things that are meant to last.
You know, one thing, okay, this is really interesting, because you got me thinking about something. When we're dealing with kids and youth, we're talking about whole person development. And the objective is, in a single sentence, for the youth to achieve mastery of self in their environment. Can I understand what that means?
Yeah. Mastery
of self is different for everybody when you relate to their environment. You have to have that part of it as well. It's a systems approach. So when we look at developing youth and that mastery of self, we want to concentrate on them as what are their strengths and weaknesses. How do we improve their ability to survive? You know, we also look at what's called, I forgot what the exact term is, but look at it as a pickup game in basketball. Mm-hmm. You could have a whole bunch of friends with you, and you could have this guy you hate. The passion.
Yeah.
But with a pickup game, if he's the best player, you're going to pick him first because you want to win and you don't care about the personal things with it. Imagine kids who want to do something in a community will begin to pick their friends for projects based on their skill sets, such as somebody's really good at writing something or somebody's good at doing research. So I need to be a part of my team. Those are the kind of things that we want to kind of create that are so far removed from our kids now, to me, in my opinion. And that kind of mentality is we're having sustainable development within the community. We're calling it community-based education, supporting community-based enterprise. Where in Baltimore, we had kids who wanted to do something about blight in the community. So Baltimore has an excessive amount of abandoned homes. And on top of that, the home's been ransacked where anything of value, the piping is gone, the moldings are gone, the things that are made of value. So it becomes just empty shells. So what we were doing in Baltimore was to create some sort of wealth or enterprise. We were converting these buildings with solar panels on the roofs. We were getting water capture systems. Energy generating systems, batteries, and then we were getting PVC tubing and creating vertical gardens. So the objective was to create a vertical garden system in all these abandoned homes that would be self-sustaining, off the grid. We had Johns Hopkins University, Bloomberg School of Engineering and Health, John Hopkins, Engineers Without Borders. We had a justice group, an architectural firm, and we were able to create what's called scripts that allow us to perceive what the step-by-step mechanics of that would look like. And then those who are participating go through the steps. And we had documents that may start out with 5 pages in about 3 months. We're now 55 pages long.
Oh, wow.
And what they were doing were they would create all the things necessary to make that a shovel-ready project. The next step would get funding to do it. So that's kind of like how we were looking at community-based education supporting community-based enterprise, creating opportunities. And there are hundreds of different opportunities like that in most communities.
I like this approach because it moves people towards action, and it's like, rather than planning has its place, I will say that, but action that's what makes it reality. And with that approach, especially with, if we're talking with our youth, one of the phrases I heard that just totally makes sense to me, it's like we have a generation where they have the most information you could ever want, but they're like ill-equipped to act, and they have like no confidence in themselves. And I'm like, that right there, like I understand that. And yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, what I was gonna say was one of the, it's a conversation I have with friends all the time. You know, I grew up in the civil rights movement, you know, and how it was able to move a conscience of the country in a different direction through a very sophisticated, coordinated acts of people across the country to do things that, like nonviolent resistance or those things that are seen to be unconceivable today. They didn't have the sophisticated communication devices that we have today. They were using phones, and you know, there was not much more than that. So the sophistication, as we were talking about earlier, the new, is not necessarily the best. And how everything that's happened in since the social media is just made to isolate us more. So yeah, there's a disconnect in our capabilities versus how we're utilizing them, where we should be further along than we are in areas. That's how I see it.
So would you say we kind of need to move more? I mean, you kind of even mentioned this earlier, like we need to move towards more like teamwork and collaboration rather than like kind of isolation and like individual performance, which is kind of how schools are right now.
I'm saying it's the only way that the youth will survive. You know, I mean, and there's going to be a lot of changes in the next 10, 20, 30 years that I don't think our youth are prepared to deal with. If you get the chance to read A Nation at Risk, all those ills that the document stated we need to avoid, we did every one of them. I mean, you know, we did every one of them, and we're in the wrong direction. And I talk to kids from around the world in different things that I do, and I just find that our kids here are just not equipped to even understand what's going on in the world, you know? So in a sense, they are much further along than the adults here, but they're not as far as a lot of the youth I see in other parts of the world.
Gotcha. So they're, okay, I see what you're saying now. So it's more of a, we're lagging behind other countries, and we need to find another way to try and develop some of these things that we need to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to remember that opportunities aren't going to be as available to the youth as they were before. Investment's not available. If you start a company, and there are forces in the market now that will work against you. There's a lot of things, a lot of challenges that the youth have in their life going forward that didn't exist 20, 30, 40 years ago. And we just kind of need to understand what kind of impact that's going to have on their ability to survive and thrive. So that's all.
And that's the key part right there, thrive, right? We want to thrive, not only just survive, but thrive as well. Well, Walter, thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us. If people want to get involved with this program that you're doing, or just any way, find you, reach out to you, whatever it may be, what's the best way that they can do that, and how can they get involved?
You can call contact at villageportal.org. Let me make sure about that. Contact at villageportal.org will get me, or you can go to www.villageportal.org, mm-hmm. and you can just push contact, and it will get an email to me immediately. So there are ways that you can find out about the programs that we're doing. If you have an interest in doing something in your community, at a library or community center or a church, I would encourage you to give us a call, and we can set you up because it's virtual. It's all online. It's a web-based system. And help you organize your community as well. So again, it's www.villageportal.org. And in that, you'll see contact us and just click there and you can get a hold of me.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Alter, for coming on again. And
Josh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, everyone, as you can tell, that is Walter Holmes. He's a very intelligent person, has great things to share. I challenge you guys, if anything spoke to you or if you're interested in getting involved, to reach out to Walter. He left some information there for you to do that. Stay tuned till next week. We have a great guest lined up for you guys. See you guys next week, and let's get after it. Hey everyone, if you liked this episode and would like to hear more, be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button. We release a new episode every Wednesday for you guys to listen to. Thank you guys so much for the support that you give. We could not have done this without you guys. If you would like to be a potential guest on the show, check out intelligentconvos.com and fill out the form there. Thank you guys again, and let's get after it.